All right, Alexander, we have the conclusion of the summit between Russia and NATO. And as we predicted, really not much of anything was done. What we do have, though, is today a lot of news coming out of the United States. There are Democrats in the U.S. that are pushing a bill which will place sanctions on Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Kremlin has hit back and they said, well, if you place sanctions on our president, you're pretty much just cutting off ties with us, period. So that has been their response to that. So we have that, which has now been put on the table. We have, I believe it's Ted Cruz and some other lawmakers who are now pushing hard for sanctions with regards to Nord Stream 2. And of course, you have the usual posturing, which is Russia, if they invade Ukraine, we're not going to give them iPhones. Everyone's stuck on iPhones. We're not going to give them iPhones and MacBooks and stuff like that. And I mean, they seem very fixed on that line of sanctioning should Russia invade Ukraine. The talks, you know, I don't think they went very well. But what was your thoughts on the talks and the fallout that has taken place after?
Well, the first thing to understand about the NATO-Russia summit is that there weren't any talks at all. What happened was the Russians turned up, their deputy foreign minister Grushko, who's not their lead negotiator, by the way, and he was accompanied by a senior military man, deputy defence minister Fomin. They came along and they basically explained, they spelled it all out to the to NATO, to the not to the Americans, because the Americans have already heard it in the summit meeting that happened a few days ago in Geneva, but they spelled it out to all the Europeans. And I understand that some Europeans listened to it all in silence, and others, the usual people, were extremely angry about it. And of course, we've also have increasing signs of nervousness and anger on the part of people from the NATO Secretariat and, of course, the Commission in Brussels. I mean, they're having, in effect, a collective nervous breakdown. I mean, when I did a live yesterday on my live stream on our locals channel, platform yesterday, and quite a few people who were commenting and watched Jens Stoltenberg's press conference. Jens Stoltenberg is the NATO Secretary General, who was, you know, out there to respond to what the Russians were saying. They pointed out how incredibly nervous and stuttering and stumbling he was. What one senses that he is utterly spooked by the fact, and I think a lot of people in NATO are utterly spooked by the fact that the Russians came along and made these sort of demands and said, you know, we now have red lines, expansion of NATO can't go on, we're saying this is unacceptable, and we're prepared to take action to stop it. And one for me, I got the sense that Stoltenberg actually, at some level, senses that this game is up, even though, as I said, he was furious. But he was barely articulate at times. And now we've had an even more furious response from Josep Borrell, the utterly incompetent, utterly ideological high representative for foreign affairs from the EU, talking about how the Russians want to, you know, a second Yalta to establish spheres of influence, how they want to disrupt the entire European security architecture, how what the Russians are demanding is outrageous and unacceptable and all the rest. But notice that the big European countries, Germany, France, all the Italy, they're being extremely quiet. They're very silent in respect of all of this because, of course, coming back to all this talk about sanctions, they know perfectly well that if there was a war between Ukraine and Russia, Russia would win and would win conclusively. And if there were these sort of sanctions imposed, it would be they who would suffer. And, of course, people like Stoltenberg and Borrell can afford to take these, you know, rhetorical poses, But people like Scholz, Macron, all of the rest, they are accountable to European voters. There's already a cost of living crisis. There's already an energy crisis. I've just read reports that natural gas reserves in Europe are now at record lows, despite the warm weather. And they know that if there's a crisis of this kind, they will suffer, and they will suffer the consequences at the hands of European voters. So you can see this division. And if we now move on to the United States, what you see again, it seems to me, is on the part of some people in Congress, people like Senator Menendez, people like Senator Cruz, is the equivalent of a tantrum. We're going to sanction Putin himself. Nobody seems to have worked out exactly what that means. I mean, what form are these sanctions going to take? Does it mean that Putin can't travel to America? Presumably. But in that case, you still have to talk to him. So all that means is you have to travel to Moscow. It presumably also means seizing all his wealth abroad, except, of course, despite endless attempts to locate this wealth, no one has found it because it doesn't exist. It's a ludicrous thing to do. And as you rightly said, all the other things that they've been talking about, all the various sanctions that we've talked about, SWIFT, you know, disconnecting Russia from SWIFT, preventing iPhones being sold to Russia. None of that is going to impress the Russians or affect them very much. It simply doesn't amount to what I think these people hope it will. And I suspect this is really why we're getting these weird, far-out ideas of sanctioning Putin himself. Now, my understanding is that what has happened is that the administration, Biden, let's call it the Biden administration, because other people call it other things. He doesn't want sanctions on Nord Stream 2. And he wants to stop Ted Cruz's proposal, which would require 60 votes in the Senate. And so he's told the Democrats, vote it down, because the Germans still want Nord Stream 2, which is interesting in itself. And therefore, we're supporting this alternative sanctions package put forward by Senator Menendez. So we're going to get this sanctions package by Senator Menendez. There's a chance, there's a reasonable chance that Ted Cruz's sanctions proposal will therefore fail, in which case, of course, what was actually going to happen is we're not going to get any sanctions at all, and the Russians in the summer are going to get Nord Stream 2. That seems to be what the White House wants, because I say we're not going to get these sanctions because, of course, this fear about a Russian invasion of Ukraine is just not going to happen. So we have this really bizarre piece of theatre and all these tantrums that people are putting on. But the fact is they can't get the genie now back into the bottle. The Russians have said no eastward expansion of NATO. No way Ukraine is going to enter NATO. There's going to be a war if you want it. If you do it, the sanctions that you are talking about are going to backfire on you. And of course, if you want to sanction our president, it'll create more problems for you, but it doesn't impress us.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to sanction Nord Stream 2, in effect punishing Germany.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense,
yeah.
But whatever. I mean, I'm surprised that Germany doesn't come back and say, you know, stop, we're the ones that want Nord Stream 2, so stop with this sanctioning nonsense. But if they don't sanction Nord Stream 2, then perhaps you might get the Menendez legislation being sanctions against Russia and various Russian oligarchs and business people, but taking out the Putin part, you know, removing that and just kind of, once again, throwing into the mix more various sanctions on various Russian individuals.
Yeah,
ex-Putin. You might get something like that.
It's the usual rag bag of sanctions plus a disconnection from SWIFT. I mean, it all ultimately, I mean, you know, the Russians will be looking at this and they'll be saying, you know, Is this it? Is this it? Is this all? Is this all you're really up to? Up for?
I mean, well, this connection from Swift, you think they may go there?
I think they might go.
Menendez
wants it. So that's where they go. Of course, the Europeans may not want it, and the Europeans would, in theory at least, have to agree to it. But, you know, they could do it. I mean, they might do it. You know, they've disconnected Iran from SWIFT. It hasn't changed anything with Iran. Russia is not Iran. It's a vastly better organized, immeasurably bigger, far more sophisticated, far more powerful economy. They will suffer some disruption if they're disconnected from SWIFT, but they'll absorb it, as they always have. What it will do is it will undermine further the global financial system by taking an important G20 country out of it. And, of course, ultimately, by doing that, undermine the dollar itself. It's not a policy. It's a tantrum.
Yeah. Why doesn't NATO just say, you know, we're not going to expand to Ukraine and Georgia? Because there's Georgia as well, which is on the table. How come they just don't say it?
Yes.
Is it just the fact that if NATO admits that, then the truth is revealed that NATO really doesn't have a purpose whatsoever? Because why do you even have NATO? And it's an organization that is in constant search of a reason to exist. So the minute it stops expanding, there's no real reason to have NATO. Why don't they just say it? Fine, we're not going to expand to Ukraine and Georgia eastward. We're done. We're finished expanding.
Is that
so hard?
You have put your finger on it. By the way, this is the other thing that I think is making them incredibly nervous. There are increasing voices, especially in the United States. Remember, the United States, for all its massive problems, it's still a superpower. There's still people there able to think and able to talk. But there is a fascinating article in today's Financial Times by a senior fellow at the RAND Corporation, which is, of course, the US government's major think tank. But he makes exactly the point you've just made. We're not going to expand NATO into Ukraine and Georgia. It's not happening. So why not be honest about it and just say so? That will diffuse the tensions. And an American is able to say it, but they don't want to say it for exactly the reason you said. Because at that point, people like Stoltenberg and Borrell start to worry that before very long, the organizations, the institutions they serve will have lost their purpose and they will be out of a job.
Yeah, exactly. The minute they say that, then the entire United States begins to question, why are we even paying for this?
Exactly.
Why are we taking our tax dollars and all our money and funding an organization that has no real purpose to begin with?
Absolutely.
And you're going to have this huge structure, this huge institution, you know, go belly up.
Absolutely.
Period.
To be very clear, there's
and why should the Americans pay for this?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, to be very clear, there's a small group of people in the United States, the neocons, people like that, who want to hold on to NATO because they have this fantasy of breaking up Russia and encircling China and establishing U.S. global hegemony in that kind of way. I think the number of people who think like this in the United States is tiny. The true interests of the United States is to accept the fact that the Cold War lasted between 1945 and 1991 is ended, that NATO, far from being an asset, is a burden. That all it is doing is it is involving the United States in all sorts of problems and squabbles that the Europeans have and is distracting the United States from its real interests as well as absorbing US resources. I think there are some people in the United States who understand that. I think Donald Trump had an instinct for that. And I think that these events, these discussions that we're seeing over the last couple of weeks have probably strengthened those doubts about the value of NATO to the United States. And that's why we see people like Stoltenberg and Borrell and all the rest looking so worried and so nervous.
Yeah, but in order for the United States to project military power hegemony, it doesn't even need NATO.
No, of course it doesn't.
NATO serves zero purpose.
Well, absolutely.
To the US's is military objectives.
Absolutely, absolutely, completely so. I mean, consider NATO supposedly joined the United States in Afghanistan. It was supposed to be a NATO mission, not a US mission. What relevance did NATO actually have in Afghanistan? It was the US that did all the fighting. Same in Iraq, same everywhere. The US carries the burden for all the others. NATO is not an asset, it's a liability. It's a distraction, it weighs down resources, and it means that the United States finds itself in the classic, you know, tail wagging the dog situation, where it finds that it's got to worry about what Lithuania or Romania think, with, you know, all these countries having their particular fixations and obsessions. And the United States, which has no real interest in these issues, in these quarrels, dragged in to try to mediate them or to try to help these countries when they get into trouble with Russia. So, I mean, it's a problem. It's not an asset. It's a liability. It doesn't help project American power. I mean, look at fleets. Look at U.S. fleet, the U.S. fleet, the U.S. Navy. And compare it with the aggregate power of all the European navies, all the other NATO navies. I mean, it's not even a contest. Britain has two aircraft carriers. You can't compare them with US Navy supercarriers. The French, ditto. No one else has anything. So how can you compare the military power of the NATO alliance with that of the United States? From the US point of view, militarily, in terms of its global posture, it would make no difference.
Yeah, well, it would make a difference to the bank accounts of all of these European
guys that are feeding off
of the American taxpayer. Well, exactly. That's the issue.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And by the way, can I just quickly to complete this? I mean, anybody who thinks that if, you know, NATO packed up, the Russians will march to the Rhine is indulging in fantasies. If NATO packs up, what will finally happen is what should have happened years ago, is that countries like Lithuania, Romania, Poland and all the rest will finally face up to the geographic realities and sort out their relations with Russia. Something they should have done ages ago, but they've been able to avoid doing it. They've been able to play out all their fantasies of recreating the Zhezhopolita and all that nonsense because they are able to ride American power. If American power is gone and they're left to their own resources, they won't be threatened by Russia because Russia has no interest in absorbing them. But they will have to finally sort out their relations with Russia. And far from it being a NATO withdrawal, a NATO disappearance, far from endangering peace in Europe, would on the contrary strengthen peace in Europe, because we would finally see all these weird projects that all these people have been following, they would finally be abandoned.
Yeah. Well, also on the flip side, it would allow countries that are dependent on NATO to not only deal with Russia, but they could deal with the United States on a bilateral level.
Well, indeed. And, you know,
there's no reason to go through NATO. You know,
absolutely.
Poland can easily negotiate with the United States or Romania and say, look, we want X, Y, and Z.
Exactly. Of course they can.
Or with France or with the UK, whatever.
Yeah. There's no reason why they can't. Absolutely. They could start operating their own foreign policies for a change. I mean, you know, their own realistically founded foreign policies. They could build up their armed forces. I mean, one of the reasons, by the way, why, I mean, there's always this story about, you know, NATO coming along, the US coming along and saying that NATO countries need to increase, spend more money on defence. And they always say, oh, yes, we're going to do that. And then they never do. A story I've been hearing now ever since the middle years of the Cold War. The reason West NATO countries, European countries, don't develop their own armed forces is because they're afraid that if they do, the Americans will say, well, you know, you're fully able to look after yourselves. Why do you need us anymore? So if the US pulls out, if NATO's closed down, then they might actually have to start making those kind of decisions themselves about what kind of defence system they really have. They can do their deals with America. They can do their deals with Russia. They can follow proper foreign policies and proper defence policies for a change. And, of course, many of them don't want to be put in that situation. But it's bizarre that the US has been so willing for so long to indulge them. I want to make a very important point, I think, which is one of the things that this whole affair has smoked out is that, yes, there's the neocons in the United States and they're a real menace. I don't want to understate the danger these people pose. But it's now become blindingly obvious, absolutely obvious, that the real hostility to Russia, the real people who have been driving relations between the West and Russia to the point of crisis, are not found in Washington. They are found in Brussels. It is the bureaucracies in Brussels, the EU and NATO bureaucracies, that have been pushing this thing and which have brought us to the pass that we're in.
Yeah, you know, on a final note, I'm sure there's a lot of European countries that would see their economic situation worsen if they had to actually budget military spending. I mean, they would probably see the social welfare state collapse, because right now they have the luxury of not spending anything on defense and allocating that money to essentially this, what people in the United States, when they look at Europe, they think of the social welfare model that everyone marvels at. But, you know, people forget that, these countries in Europe, they can spend that extra GDP on certain programs because they don't have to allocate any amount of money towards defense. That's, the U.S. picks up the tab there.
Absolutely. And the U.S. is subsidizing European welfare states, which, of course, it doesn't have itself. And that's an excellent point, by the way. And notice that, you know, it's countries like Denmark, Norway, Denmark especially, which is one of the Netherlands, which have these very generous welfare states, which are very, very weak militaries, essentially non-existent militaries. And they are often the most outspoken and aggressive about relations with Russia. Because, of course, from their point of view, this gravy train works for them. They keep NATO going. They don't have to have militaries. They can rely on the United States and they can keep their nice, cushy welfare states going. And it's the US taxpayer who has to pick up the tab.
Yeah. All right. We will leave it there. TheDuran.locals.com. Everybody, Odyssey, BitChute, Rumble, and Super U. Look for us there on those platforms. And go to the Duran shop. Use the code GOODDAY. Get 10% off all merch. There's the mug. Just type that in on checkout. You can get 10% off anything you purchase on Duran shop. Take care.